Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Seaweed Brain. Today, we are diving back into the Sun and the Star. What are we doing today? We're going to be having a lot of flashbacks. We're going to be talking about formative experiences of youth in the past. That was vague. We're going to be talking about the coming out scene. We're going to be talking about a journey through the underworld. Stick around.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm Erica. I am the co-host of this podcast, joined today by Carter.
Hi, it's me. Yes.
And we have a returning special guest today, Martha. What's up, Martha?
Hi, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, it's so lovely to have you back. This section of chapters today, or rather the very last Gorgaira interlude we will be getting to, is the one and only time I actually shed tears while reading this book for the first time. So, as I said before we started recording, it's going to be hard to really like formulate ideas and say anything smart other than just kind of like reading some stuff and sitting with it. But if that's what we do, then that's what we do. So, do we need to? Oh my God. Wait, Martha, we have to ask you a question. Before we get started, because we're hanging out with the troglodytes in this chapter, we need to hear how you pronounce at one troglodyte name of your choice. There are several in this section of chapters, so it can be up to you.
Okay, I think I'll go with the classic. In my brain, it's always screech bling, but also sometimes it's like bling, and it's like an actual like screeching sound.
Yes, that was a really excellent. That was like a squawk almost, like a squawk bling. I love that. Thank you for sharing your artistry with us.
You're so welcome.
Now that that's out of the way, I think we can get started. So we last left off in the Dark Pages, like the Dark Ages, but the Dark Pages. Nico's journey through Tartarus, the first time, finding out about his interaction with Nyx. We are back in Troglodyte Town, and everyone is like, blink, 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 whoa.
After Nico finished his story, there was a long silence in the Trog's council chamber. Will stared at some faraway place as he absorbed what he had just heard. The Trog counselors frowned at one another, as if wondering who would be brave enough to speak first. Nico felt exposed and vulnerable. He never planned to share what had happened to him after getting dragged to Tartarus. It was simply easier to bury it deep within his mind. And, in fact, there were parts of it he had forgotten, just as Nyx had warned him might happen. Maybe his mind had done that to keep him safe. But as he recounted the story, it all came back in terrifying detail. Maybe that whole PTSD thing had a lot more merit than he'd previously accepted.
He has a little breakdown. He cries in Will's arms. But after his initial burst of sorrow, Nico began to feel self-conscious, aware of the trogs waiting around the table. He pulled away and wiped his face. "Okay, okay," he said. "No more feeling sad. It is what it is." "You're allowed to have feelings, Nico," said Will. Do you ever have that burst of emotion and then you cry and then you're like, "Wait, that was stupid. LOL."
Literally me earlier today, I was like going through it and then I was like, "Pull yourself together. Like, what is going on?" So that's real.
How embarrassing of me.
I know. I was like, oh my gosh.
Especially when everyone, all the trogs are like staring at him. Oh, that's hard. We break down here some stuff I think we talked about a good deal last time about Nyx. Her purpose in life is to shape things into their purest possible form, personifications of a negative emotion. All of her children are called Kako demons. We've met a lot of them before. Karen counts as one. Mrs. O'Leary is technically one. Also, Auklis, who Nico met in a dream that one time that she said, "I can't make you hurt anymore. You are already pure pain. You're perfect." Okay, this is on page 182. "She's a primordial goddess of night and darkness. There's nothing she despises more than someone who leaves their darkness behind. She doesn't like beings who reject the form they were destined for." So, of course, Bob, not so good. And Howl Smith says, "You must face her." Howl Smith is an iconic figure who is leader of the council. She wears many, many hats, multicolored beanies stacked like pancakes. Quote, "She didn't look like your typical government official, but she sat forward, her hands interlaced, and fixed Nico with a state of absolute authority. Suddenly, Nico understood why she'd been made a leader of the council." I know exactly who this woman is. That is such a gift of a description. Don't you just know her? Don't you like aspire to be her already immediately?
I'm obsessed with her. That's all I have
right?
to say.
Right? Like instantly.
Like, I need her in my life bad.
Bad. again with the therapy. You have to face her. If you don't face her, she will torment you and Bob forever. And Nico's like, I don't understand. Why does she care about me? I'm just one demigod. And then everybody hypes up Nico. Trogs don't have eyebrows, but how Smith arched the skin where her eyebrows would have been. You are Nico D'Angelo. The other Trogs murmured and nodded. You show new ways through the dark, Jones added. You see the Trogs, said Bling. You see Bob the Titan. Will smiled and squeezed his hand. Nyx hates what you represent. Change. Oh, Smith nodded wisely, or at least the potential for it.
Aww.
He's a hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. They are obsessed with him, and I think it's so cute. Because he doesn't, I don't know, he doesn't want them to be, but they are. And I just, it warms my heart a little bit.
I think that this is also a way of getting us to think more about and to expound more on the idea of storytelling and the canon and the framing device that we have. Because, you know, these conversations with Gorgaira that are literally about storytelling, yes, important, but also that's hitting you over the head. That's telling you this is a story about stories. This is why this is important. But I think that that really has to be juxtaposed with these other conversations where we are actually seeing the impact of Nico on other people and their thinking. And
yeah, that's what this section is all about.
Yeah. He is being seen as a role model, someone who has cleared and cut a certain path. And that's, I think, important. I think that some people could see this as Rick patting himself on the back and being proud of what he's done, which I think it a little bit is. But it also has this dimension of taking Nico not just as a figure who has this place in the readers' lives, but also reaching out to individual readers and saying that, you know, the way that you are moving through the world and the things that you are doing at the individual level to live the way that you want to live are also then going to be important and have spillover effects on the people around you, that there are younger people who will live better lives because you are trying to do something. Or not even younger people, like people who are socially marginalized relative to you, people who are around you but are looking to, I don't know, change certain aspects of their lives and are feeling uninspired or confused as to how to do that. I think there's a lot of richness and dimensionality to this little conversation that is especially important because it is coming from the esteemed Howell Smith.
Mm-hmm. That one's Carter, right? We tagged you as that one. It only makes sense. Yes.
In aspiration.
Oh yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think the beautiful layer we must remember also about the scene is that Will is still wearing the cheese hat. We just need to rethink everything and just remember that that is also happening right now. The decision is made. The Trogs will be helping Nico and Will travel through the underworld because, again, we're still trying to avoid Hades because we don't want him to know what's going on. But I feel like he would be supportive. I don't know. That's a different conversation. I don't actually think he'd be that mad about this. I feel like he's a distant enough parent that he wants Nico to be happy and he knows that this is like a journey Nico has to take in order to be happy.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think that they're underestimating him a bit. I think he's more supportive.
Yeah. It's decided that they will rest and then at Mushroom Glow, the Trogs will escort them through their hidden pathways. Do we have to once again with the Will being like, this isn't disturbing to you? And Nico being like, why would it be? It's just how things are. The underworld is my second home, Will. They're talking about like ghosts wandering around and being careful and stuff. And Will shivers and says, I could never live here. And Nico bit back the urge to say, no one's asking you.
No, and he should have said it out loud because no. I think he needed to hear it a little bit. Like, be serious.
Be serious. But also the growth. The growth is the biting back.
This is true.
It's the filter developing before our very eyes. Okay, and this, I gotta shout it out real quick. This is Nico. We are thankful for your help. I owe you many rare skinks for your troubles. That sent the council into a new frenzy of excitement until Howell Smith was able to calm them down. We help you because it is right, son of Hades, she said. Not because we expect tasty skinks. But we will not refuse tasty skinks, added Scratch Bling. He stood so quickly his tricorn hat almost fell off. Now come, I will take you to our nap cove where you may rest with our young ones. Will smiled weakly. Nap time with baby troglodytes? Scratch Bling nodded. They will cherish the opportunity to share blankies with heroes. What if I said this is the moment I cried?
I would believe you.
They're going to share blankies with heroes? If the troglodytes are already so cute, just imagine the little baby ones in little knit baby hats that they pulled off of the soles of dead babies floating in river sticks. So they're going to share blankies with heroes?
There aren't dead babies floating in the sticks.
Wait, how do you know that?
They're discarded from the dead babies into the sticks.
Oh, sorry. I was confusing my rivers.
Oop.
Anyway, nap time.
As they moved through the cavernous main area, it was Will's joke about Nick's taking some of Nico's darkness that bothered Nico the most. If it only were that easy. If only someone could just remove all the dark and scary and sad parts of him. But at the same time, they made up who Nico was. He wouldn't be Nico D'Angelo without his past. But did that make him less appealing to Will? Ugh, it was so confusing to think about. Nico wished he wasn't so sad all the time, but he also didn't like the idea of giving it up. What was someone like him supposed to do?
Sometimes reading this book is like reading a journal entry I wrote to myself in 2014.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it's just so like adolescent.
I think that the language is so stark in this. It feels like a departure from a lot of the prior novels in a way that we have been discussing, because this is a co-authored book, that Nico is basically having this internal dialogue that is 100% like just to the word, something that you would say to a therapist and then a therapist would have an answer for you. Or something that would be like, there's an episode of like BoJack Horseman that is exclusively somebody being like, what is my identity if I'm not a depressed person anymore? And that show is like, you know, a nightmarish hellscape of mental illness made for adults. So to see that in this context, the rawness, the explicitness of him being like, this is the crux of my emotional journey right now. Fascinating. Refreshing.
Reading Into the Light by Mark and then yes. Reading this too. Yes. Is like, I think Mark is just so much more like straightforward with like how their characters are feeling. And I feel like I appreciate that in this book, because no shade to Rick, but I feel like sometimes like his characters just kind of go through the motions a little bit and you kind of have to interpret what it is that they're feeling. But this is like very, very forward of like, this is what I'm feeling in this moment and I'm going to be honest mm-hmm. about it. And I think mm-hmm. especially for like kids that are reading this, like that's really powerful, because it's like you're not alone in feeling this way, and like here's your favorite author telling you that that's okay to feel that way as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Rick yes. is like a sitcom novel writer, like wacky situation, like strong characters, and then Mark comes in like an HBO Max drama. Just we're in the thick of it, shaky cam with these characters, and then together they combine their greatest talents to create like a really wonderful 8-episode Hulu limited series.
8-episode Hulu limited series. Is there a particular reference point that you have in mind?
I just feel like it's Hulu. Is it not? Is it Disney Plus?
Oh. Uh-oh. No, I think it is Hulu. Is this like The Bear? Is The Bear on Hulu? The Bear is like Hulu FX, right?
I have not seen The Bear yet.
I haven't seen
her. I love her.
Erica, The Bear has Io and also Father Bra.
Oh my God, Renee.
Renee, he's one of the writers and he's on season 2. He like appears on screen.
I literally will get around to it. I've been binging The After Party, which is so good.
Right. I have to do that
and
next.
Speaking of Hulu limited series, Anna Conkle is in this season of The After Party.
Oh,
co-creator
there
of
we
Pen
go.
15.
That's the Hulu
reference that we were
looking for.
Were we talking about
Pen
15 last time we were here, Martha?
Yeah, I think so.
We just did that entire tangent just to circle it back to Pen 15.
Wow, yeah. That is the reference that we were looking for. Very important.
Wait, what's her brother's name? Shuji?
Shuji! Shuji.
If only Shuji could Dallas come Liu. Carry us out of Tartarus at the end of this book on a skateboard, then it would truly be Pen 15. Where the hell were we? Oh, okay. Nico's
we went to sleep.
Really scared about not being a depressed person anymore. He goes to sleep. He has a nightmare. Nyx is speaking to him through the form of Bianca. And he's like, I hate dream logic. Choose, said Bianca. Message received. Bianca pulled an arrow from her quiver. Choose, Nico. Leave a message at the tone, he snarled. Beep. I love silly, goofy Nico, you know?
No, it's truly great. It's great. Because he's real for that.
He wakes up. He's sweating. But he sees Will sleeping next to him. Canoe interlude, the first of two we have today. This one's a little shorter. The last canoe interlude, it's been kind of a while, was, do you remember that moment when I realized this was more than a friendship? Well, I think it was different for both of us. And Gorgaira says, tell me one more story. So here's that story.
Do you want to, how much of this are we going to read?
Not much.
Yeah.
In order to tell the story, it's a bit too long. They have to break down the entire thing of Leo dying and then coming back to life, which is really interesting to hear about from Nico's perspective and also like the perspective of like a camper in Will, you know, just like a B plot character.
Yeah. Where they don't like 100% know the mechanics.
Yeah.
Will basically understands that Nico's really upset. As someone who like senses death and is very attuned to it, he has had a lot more information about this, but also information that has made him more confused and more emotionally kind of distraught about this whole situation. So Will basically grabs Nico, marches him out, and has him do an extended therapy exercise in the middle of the woods and just scream as a form of catharsis.
Well, for Nico, no one had ever done something for me like that before. That's when I started to look at you differently, as in caring, as in smart, as in like useful to him, you know, like with interesting techniques for life. And then the moment for Will,
he comes in right afterwards and says that it was the week in the infirmary. Now, this is something that we have a little, I mean, I guess we have some context for both of these, but this was how we saw the two of them start to transition their relationship at the end of the Blood of Olympus, right? And so we begin by kind of rehashing that moment, that sequence at the end of that book, where that book ends with Nico being really anxious about having just kind of maybe kind of killing Octavian in front of Will and having that be a deal breaker. And then Will goes and finds him and is like, we're going to do this together. You are going to come and help me and be a friendly face as we make the rounds and as I help to heal people after this battle. And so we're actually describing that experience. Should we read a little bit? I tried, said Nico. That week was painful. I constantly felt lost. But you never gave up, said Will. And I don't know, your dedication just felt so beautiful to me. That's all it took for me to see you differently.
See, so yeah, for Will, it was seeing Nico in this like caring, committed, loyal, loving, and also like vulnerable, like bumbling way. The fact that these moments were different for the both of them and like the sides that they saw says so much about both of them, you know, like they were seeing these sides that they had never seen of the other person before.
It is, I think, also very illuminating that Nico is like, I actually knew. I saw you looking at me.
Yeah.
That way.
That is so real. Nico is so real for that.
I think that is an important, like, you know, emotional instigator for Nico's own development of deeper emotions.
He says, quote, if you hadn't looked at me that way, well, later on, I don't think I would have had the courage to come out to you and tell you I wanted to go on a date. Gorgaira clapped her hands together lightly. Nico noticed her skin tone had changed from light blue to something closer to lavender, the gayest of colors. Excuse me for my excitement, she said. I am so used to hearing stories of isolation that I am overjoyed at hearing one of connection. Apparently, those stories weren't just giving Will some fortitude, they were affecting Gorgaira too. Gorgaira, as the reader here, we are so used to hearing queer stories where one of them dies, or they both die, or it's about being isolated. And here we are, like, getting these joyful,
yes,
beautiful moments.
Gorgaira, the exhausted speaker, if you will, of the Fujoshi Congress. She's having her moment. Yeah, good for her.
Would you explain out that reference card?
Yes, please.
So a Fujoshi is a Japanese woman or girl who consumes almost exclusively content about gay boys as a way primarily of trying to, in a weird way, remove
misogyny,
toxic gender dynamics and misogyny from the experience of being able to consume love stories. So being able to look at like a man expressing love and being in a relationship, but doing that without condescension and gender politics that are as strong. Anyway, I just feel like Gorgaira's reactions here delight me. And shout out to to the cultural history that she's stepping into in this moment.
Real, real.
Maybe that she's upstream of in the canon. Who can say?
Well, we're going to have a couple regular chapters and then we'll go back to Gorgaira for that story of how Nico asked Will on a date. Can't wait. Can't wait to get there. But first, chapter 20, we've got that light sunburst. So we're in Will's POV. And he's napping with the blankies. And he remembers this story. This is very first time we're hearing of this aspect of his life, being a kid when the satyr had first appeared to him. This is him in like Washington Square Park. He's being attacked by the Stymphalian birds. And then his satyr, Marin, comes and rescues him.
But also we start to get the dream distortions.
Yeah.
And Will's dream anxieties are still about abandonment from Nico. The satyr in the dream shifts to say he will leave you. When the time comes, he will choose to leave you behind.
I thought that dream was like weirdly scary to me. I don't know, everything about like being attacked by the birds just like really freaked me out. I was like, actually to be in that scenario is horrifying. And then to be told like the person you love is gonna leave you by like two people that mean a lot to you. I don't know. I had my little pen and I was like weirdly underlining a lot of this particular dream.
Ooh.
Yeah. Maybe it's just my fear of birds, though. Maybe that's what it is. Yeah.
I think it's really interesting to get a new demigod backstory for Will in this book because we are not trying to ratchet up the level of trauma in the backstory. Do you know what I mean? Where, like, bad things happened to him. And we understand that this was, like, a difficult experience for him, but we also are not trying to say that Will is secretly the most traumatized, and we're not trying to...
Yeah, like, it's just normal trauma and not, like, the worst trauma you've ever heard of.
I think we're supposed to understand this as probably being, like, a maybe median experience for a demigod, which is bad and something that you would process and is a negative experience, but also is, like survivable and something that probably, if you were to talk about with other campers, they would be like, yeah, that basically happened to me too. That's tough.
We love the like mid-tier normal demigods. Like, give me some Kayla and Austin. Give me some Lavinia Asimov any day.
Yes.
Give me some Katie Gardner.
Justice for the mid-demigods.
Literally.
Yes, exactly. Their stories also matter. And the way that their stories interact with the stories of the non-mid-demigods also matter.
Not everyone can have main character energy.
It's true. Sad but true.
Yes. What does Will wake up to? A bowl of soup from Nico. And what does Will say to this bowl of soup? Something that he thinks is a joke but comes across as rude. Okay, that was good, but please don't tell me this is broth of troglodyte armpit. I feel like you're going to. He meant it as a joke, but Nico looked irritated. It's not, said Nico. Troglodytes do eat a lot of stuff that humans do. His tone sounded almost accusatory, as if Will should love stewed shoelaces and armpit broth. Ever since they'd passed through the door of Orpheus, Will had felt like he was walking on thin ice with Nico. Will always seemed to be doing and saying the wrong thing, even if he was just trying to lighten the mood. Okay, Carter, for one moment. I love and appreciate the dual perspective in this book because we get to see Nico having this like very deep, complex like thought spiral about his fear of trusting Will and like fear that they'll never be on the same page. And then we get to see Will be like, why does Nico look so irritated at me? Like, what am I doing wrong?
I just told a joke.
Oh God, it hurts. God, it is so like just reading your own journal and just like looking at yourself in high school from like a bird's eye view and just like thinking about, oh God, like stewing in your irritation. And having this whole internal monologue, and then the person you're with who you're mad at is like, you won't even tell me what you're thinking.
Erica, were you active on TikTok during the this was a canon event 2 or 3 weeks?
No, but I saw some of it bleed onto Instagram.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Would you say that stewing in irritation while your golden retriever boyfriend is confused about why he's irritating you is a canon event?
Yeah. I think this fits the meme format well.
Nice.
Can you not hear the prowler like doo-doo-doo-doo in the background? I can.
I heard it.
I can hear that.
Essentially, Will is not feeling so good. So we've got our little gay frog uncles slash, what is a non-binary term for aunt or uncle?
See, I would just use both words by the day. I think that aunt is a more fun designation personally, but
sure.
I don't know what the word, somebody told me what it was. And I think we need to keep ideating on that one. It was my takeaway from that conversation that I was displeased with.
The term. Yeah, I agree that it's kind of both.
Yeah, there's a dictionary.com article about this. Like, I don't think that pibbling is... No disrespect to the people who use that because we do need to find something.
I don't think that... That was priceless.
Absolutely not.
I think that before we... we reach, you know, cultural saturation on that, we can try a few more things out.
Well, it's us versus dictionary.com, so we'll see who wins out.
I'm ready to fight.
We can win this war.
Yeah.
Anyway, like two queer hiking aunts and uncles come down, Screech Bling and His Majesty.
Will glanced past the CEO and was surprised to see His Majesty wearing a foam cheese hat identical to his own. A warm feeling spread through Will, almost as good as the sun globe. "You found a hat," he noted. "I like it." His Majesty was perhaps the most bashful troglodyte Will had ever seen. They blinked a few times, then ducked behind Screech Bling. "It is a good hat," His Majesty mumbled. "A hero's hat." "Screech!" Bling grinned. "You have made an impression, son of Apollo. And do not worry about His Majesty. They are brave when they need to be." "Well, so am I," said Will. "You can't judge a book by its cover." He caught Nico scowling at him. "What?" he mouthed. Nico merely shook his head. Will sighed. Sometimes it was hard to tell what Nico was feeling, too.
Will thinking he has like a fun, positive interaction, and then looking over and Nico is just so effing annoyed and he doesn't know why. Oh, it feels so good to have these characters be exactly who we thought they were.
Yes.
And let's clarify here. Nico could be more communicative, but fundamentally, he's right. Will is being condescending as hell.
Carter, no.
I'm with Carter on this one. I feel like if I was Nico, respectfully, like, he's valid for all of these. Will would be pissing me off in this scenario as well. Love him, though.
Like, Nico could absolutely turn over and be like, "Hey, Will, I think that's a bit rude. I think that we can find another way to have this interaction and to form this connection." But I think at the base level, like, is Will a bit wrong for what he did? I think the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. No.
What did he do here?
I think it's condescending.
Oh my God. You if couple you, of Nikos. What? I was like, he's trying to make a connection.
And he should try. And that is important.
Yeah.
I just think, again, like, are we done ideating yet? Like, is this our final best form? No, I don't think so. I think we can do better. And I think that we should hold him. He's talking to His Majesty. They're like one of the members of the council. They're like even though they have not found their final trog form, they are a respected member of this community. And Will is talking to them as though they are a small child. You know, I think that is disrespectful.
Fair. I guess I didn't read it as Will talking to him like a small child. But I love that you so understand where Nico is coming from on this and that you too are looking at Will with an unplaceable feeling of irritation. Will must be real cute. You know what I mean? Will must be real good looking, right? Like, he must be a handsome boy.
He must have good hair.
For Nico to have made it this far.
Good hair, practical usefulness.
Yeah.
Okay, but the irritation, it like melts away because then Will is like, the troglodytes are special, aren't they? And he finally got a smile out of his boyfriend, very much so, Nico said. So he like softens up a bit there. Nico softens.
Yeah.
He is trying. Will is trying.
He is trying. Okay. Will's trying.
And then we start walking. We're on a hike. Will is getting paler. Oh, God. I don't mean to read every moment of uncommunicated irritation out loud, but I think it's so interesting and intricate. Basically, just Will having conversations on the hike with the trogs and Nico being, like, scowling in the background. Or this time, actually, this time it's not scowling. This time it's a wistful look on his face. "What?" Will says. "It's just nice to see you give that responsibility to His Majesty to hold the sun lamp." Will shrugged. "They're just trying to help," he said. "None of the troglodytes have to, so it's the least I can do." Nico still had the same look on his face. Will squinted at his boyfriend. "I don't know what that expression means, so I'm just going to ignore it. Let's get going."
I like interpreted this as Nico being like, okay, like maybe I was a little bit wrong. And Will is like, you know, putting an effort, trying a little bit, but Nico still wants to hold the grudge a little bit. So it's kind of like, I'm not going to like compliment you. Like, I'm just going to like, you know, I'll acknowledge that you're like different, but like you're still not quite there.
Oh my God. It's so that it really harkens like that thing that Nico said at the very start of this section. I want to not be sad anymore, but like, who am I if I'm not sad? It's really manifests itself in this moment. Oh, but he's really trying and like, this is really sweet. And like, maybe it can work out, but also it can't work out. And like, ultimately I am sad and I'm sad that I'm even in this situation in the first place.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's tough. It's tough out here. And then as Nico is impatient with him, on their walk. An unfamiliar feeling was bubbling up inside Will. Why was Nico irritating him so much? So now, of course, the lack of communication from Nico explaining where his looks are coming from is leading to Will feeling irritated by the fact that he can't do anything right. Oh, how familiar this is to us. And in order to make himself feel better, he starts humming. He really is Apollo's son. He starts glowing. Nico's like, I'm proud of you. I know this is hard. Good job, Nico. You are giving the boy positive affirmations. You are being vulnerable by being nice to him. Being nice to men is so vulnerable. Let me just say that.
Yes.
Is there a more vulnerable thing you can do?
No.
It is so much easier to be mean and girl boss your way through everything. Oh my God, I wanted to talk about this. This is the perfect moment for me to wedge this in here. I'm reading Aisha Harris's book right now that she signed.
Oh my God.
Because I got to meet her. And I sat right next to her parents at the book tour event. It was amazing. One of the essays she wrote is called I'm a Cool Girl. And it is a sweet little investigation into her like identity as like a tomboy growing up. And then this like girl bossery. I will not be vulnerable to men because being vulnerable to men is acting like a woman. And if I treat men the way men treat women, then it makes me powerful and I will never be hurt. And I can have power that way. Mm-hmm. Very delightful. Sweet little essay about her learning how to be in a long-term relationship with somebody despite that upbringing and that messaging in the media that there's only one way to be powerful and it's to like be an asshole.
Yeah,
that kind of reminds me of Communion by bell hooks a little bit too, and a little bit of like All About Love, that like, I don't know, navigating that dynamic and like the line between girl boss and like, it's just an interesting growing up that way because then you have to like unlearn it and nobody really tells you how to unlearn it. You just kind of have to.
Yeah.
Yes. Aisha, she literally says in that essay that like growing, like her entering into college and reading like bell hooks for the first time amongst other writers was the first time she was encountering an idea of like femininity that like could be accessible to her in a different way. Reading in college is so special. Anyway, that was my plug. Everybody should read the collection of essays. They're so good. I'm only halfway through, but already each one of them I've considered like photocopying and scanning to Carter immediately.
Yeah, I gotta get a copy. Something to read on the train.
Okay, we flip back to Nico's POV. Bam. We're walking. We're moving. We're talking about the underworld. We're talking about Hades' palace. Nico is sharing stories. Will is sharing stories. Will says, we should visit your father's place sometime. Nico's like, are you joking? Will says, no, why would I be? I think maybe it's time. I suppose it's only fair, said Nico, after I spent all that time hanging out with your dad. To be actually fair, my dad was a teenager at the time, so I don't know how much that counts. Nico hesitated, but do you really want to meet mine? Will looked up at him. Of course, he's important to you, so he's important to me. In moments like this, the harder parts of being in a relationship with a child of Apollo were easy to forget. Will was so quick to be kind. There wasn't an insincere bone in his body. So Nico sat on the ground in front of Will and leaned against him, comforted by his presence and loyalty and warmth. I think the term golden retriever boyfriend, despite throwing it out fairly liberally today, is like dangerous and weird at times. But I do think that this like dynamic between person who fears what not being sad is going to feel like and person who is like inherently so good and kind and open and vulnerable is tale as old as time.
It's like Grumpy X Sunshine, but like better. It feels more sincere.
Yeah. Grumpy X Sunshine, I think, can be translated into like intense, deathly fear of vulnerability and intense inability to be anything but open.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's the right way into it because a lot of people, I think, get confused because of the loose language that is used to describe the family of tropes that are around this.
Yeah, it's like, not you like can't one just is make submissive one blonde
and one of them has dark hair. You know, like there are all of those, like exactly, like these different fonts of this that people think are interchangeable and increasingly are using to make formulaic and not just unimaginative, but I would say also like genuinely bad and harmful stories about this, because they think that they can just tap into this mother load without doing that much labor or implementing that much specificity that is appropriate and careful. And I think this book does not do that. This is important that you can have a blonde person date a not blonde person, but you just have to think hard about what's going on there and about the emotional interchange that is happening alongside that.
We should continue to think hard about blonde people.
I just finished reading that Tressie McMillan Cotton article that we were talking about earlier. I can't remember the actual title, but it's the opinion piece that is her reflecting on the time she got banned from TikTok for upsetting blonde people.
I just checked out her collection of essays from the library, and I intend to read it when I'm done with Wannabe and the James Baldwin essay set, which Aisha literally references in one of her essays. Yeah, thick. Okay, so His Majesty says we just need to make it past one more obstacle before we reach the shortcut to Tartarus, because we are in a video game. What's the obstacle? Well, turns out it's a farm. Quote, this is the top of 209. And just like that, Nico's creeping dread reappeared. It was two-pronged. First, he was annoyed that, once again, Will couldn't seem to imagine life in the underworld. Second, a memory started to surface in the depths of Nico's mind. A vague recollection of something Hades had told him about a farm during the same trip when Nico had found Hazel Levesque, his half-sister, wandering the fields of Asphodel. What had Hades warned him about? Nico wished he could contact Hazel. She'd probably have the answer. She had a better memory. As Nico and Will followed the Trogs, he thought about how much he missed Hazel. He was learning to make peace with that feeling. It was okay for him to miss people because that meant he wanted them around in his life. That idea was very new for him. He was used to either pushing people away or watching them recoil from his presence. There was a time he'd even tried to push Will away. Where would he be now if he'd actually followed through with that? Thought this was very beautiful and needed more Hazel in this book, but I'll take the crumbs.
Yes.
Like, is this literally the first time she's been mentioned?
Yeah, and it's like halfway through the book. Justice for her.
And Reyna.
And Reyna.
His sisters.
Reyna deserved more screen time, just generally, but especially in this book. Where was she at?
We should have had to, like, iris message Reyna from Tartarus, you know? The way that Annabeth burned up the napkin. We should have been, like, napkin communicating to Reyna for advice here.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
If they're trying to do these parallels to the House of Hades, where was that one? Where is Reyna come rendezvous with us at this point to help rescue us and accomplish a task? Anyway.
We make it to the farm and we see, quote, the creature with the head of a red Angus bull, the shirtless torso of a muscular man with crimson skin and black leather pants over dark work boots. Minotaur, Will yelped, assuming a defensive stance. Should we run? That's not the Minotaur, said Nico. And no, we should not run. The bullman sprinted up the hill, charging straight toward them. Are you sure about that? Will asked. He will not attack you. Scratch, Bling promised cheerfully. It is much worse than that. Nico sighed. He's a demon, Will, and he doesn't want to fight us. The bullman skidded to a stop right in front of them, panting heavily.
Oh, good, he bellowed, his voice so deep it rattled Nico's teeth. I am so glad I spotted you, because you're not going anywhere.
I believe the words Mark used talking about this character on the book tour was he is so freaking butch, if I seem to recall correctly. And then, friends, Romans, countrymen, it's time for our little last section of the episode today. The canoe interlude that put me in tears at 1 p.m. in book culture in the break room, completely ignoring my duties and work to speed read this book so that I could leave it at the store and not pay for it because I knew I was going to get a free copy later. We're going to take a quick break in the name of ad revenue and then we'll be right back. Book, said Nico. You know what Camp Half-Blood really needs to be teaching us? Gorgaira shook her head. We need courses on human emotions, said Nico. Classes on how to come out, how to talk about feelings, how to ask a cute boy on a date. You did just fine, said Will. Well, I definitely didn't intend to come out and ask you on a date in front of the whole camp. I enjoyed this line because I agree. If we taught them like human emotions and like made sure that they were all like mentally sound, maybe they wouldn't be trying to like accidentally like murder planet, etc. They were like emotionally well-adjusted. Anyway, Will starts laughing, but he starts coughing. We know he's sick at this point. We don't know what from, or he's just not doing well. Will says, I'm fine. Nico says, no, you're not. He's getting worse. We need that boat now. We've wasted too much time. The lines tightened around Gorgaira's eyes. Stories are never a waste of time, son of Hades. We are all of us made of stories. Okay. Opportunity to spew poetic lines through Gorgaira. Sure. Give it to me. I love it. I'm a sucker for it. We are all of us made of stories it really took me back to Tumblr, like, we are Stardust, like, I am infinite, like.
Some infinities are larger than other infinities.
It's a big or a small infinity. Yeah.
Galaxy print. Depression is just a side effect of dying. We are all of us made of stories.
Wow. Shout out to our first actual foray into online fan community curation and creation, which was, say it with us, a Facebook page that was supposed to post about
the Fault in Our Stars.
Fault in Our Stars.
Wait, I love that so much.
I don't care how many times we bring that up. I need it to be brought up until everybody actively thinks about it all the time in the same way that I do.
It's something that I think I'm still emotionally recovering from.
100%. Oh. Before we even get to the story itself, we have to go through like three steps. We have to start with Nico talking about being gay in the 1940s.
Yes. It's a very specific story. Nico is talking about a mythomagic heart interaction, which, gay. But specifically, the gay thing that's going on here is that he is pointing out, quote, how pretty Ares looked on his card. We, of course, immediately get sidetracked because Ares, of course, is not actually attractive in real life. And we know this. And we gotta harass him a bit.
Yeah, no, we might have to read this. Here.
Will says, at least I had the foresight to find Hermes attractive. Nico responds, Hermes? Are you kidding me? Who goes for Hermes? I do, said Will. Wow, you really do like underdogs, muttered Nico.
Boys, said Gorgaira, bowing her head toward them in a slight admonishment. Sorry, said Nico, but then he shook his head at Will. Hermes? I thought this was a safe space, Will said, smiling. I think that this interaction is made 20 times funnier when you think about it as Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Oh my God.
Of course Will thinks Lin-Manuel Miranda is attractive. He's a son of Apollo.
No. Absolutely not, please.
Oh, no. Have you heard the scuttlebutt? The scuttlebutt.
So who said what?
Martha, no. Get out of there right now.
Free me. Free me because it kind of hit when I was watching the movie in the theater.
What?
Like, I kind of was bopping in my seat a little bit.
I'm sensing the age difference between us right now in this very moment. Wow. I think you have to be like a special level of like semi-sarcastic Gen Z to really have enjoyed that song.
Yes, it was camp. It was kind of like, okay, this is bad, but it's
shiny
kind of good.
Camp too?
Shiny.
Yes.
I was kind of sad for Shiny at that point. I felt like I was hallucinating in that movie. But
yeah, listen, Lynn, you made some points at times, but that is not who I had in my head. I'm Team Will in this one instance. Hermes conceptually, obviously, attractive. Ares conceptually not attractive. It is, however, more important than any of these individual designations that they are having this conversation, because I think this is like, how do I explain that it's not just a conceptual thing that like, because gay people are like attracted to the same genders, that they can have these conversations. There's like another level to it. Do you know what I mean? Of the like queer camp that's going on, of them like comparing notes about who is attractive and who were formative experiences. Because it's also like the like retroactive childhood unlearning shame of it all that's also layered onto this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of them having this conversation and being like, we were like, there is an aspect of us that is connected previously when we were young and didn't know each other. And that makes it like not weird for us to talk about how we're attracted to other people, to each other, you know, and also be like, maybe we should understand this. And also this is commenting on the relationship that we're literally having right now.
Did we talk about this moment in real life together, Carter? I feel like we talked about this.
No, we talked about it in an earlier chapter because they were talking about Kylo Ren and Darth Vader. And
Yes. This is that. The amount of connections I've made with people being like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And they were like Mary Elizabeth Winstead. And then we high five in the air, and then that's a connection right there.
Yeah. It's always the Disney fairies. The amount of conversations I've had just like this about Silver Mist and Vidya.
Oh my God, Silver Mist was beautiful. Absolutely stunning.
Queen. She knew how to style that hair.
Oh yeah, she did. A side part for the ages. Anyway, turns out 1940s Italy was homophobic.
Turns out it was trauma. Turns out the story is actually about something deeply scarring that we took a brief detour from, and the kid was not on board. And so Nico has this as a context when he is thinking about Cupid, which we are also reloving. We're also about to rehash that.
That's why I had such a negative reaction to Cupid.
That's why I had such a negative reaction to Cupid, he said. He gave Gorgaira a brief summary of what happened a couple of years earlier, how Cupid had forced Nico to come out as some twisted form of honesty. I was terrified that Jason was going to leave me there in Croatia, he said. I completely believed it, too. Why wouldn't he? In that moment, I think Jason knew more about me than any other person on Earth. But he stayed, said Will softly. He stayed, and so did the rest of us. Yes, he said, but that experience still hurts. I know it would have been a while before I felt comfortable enough to come out to Jason, but it still should have been left up to me. It should have been my choice. It isn't fair when we are coerced to reveal ourselves, said Gorgaira. This is why it is important that whatever souls share with me is freely given. Consent, said Will, nodding. It helps people feel safe.
I started crying here because it's hard to express, having now read the book 1.5 times, the surprise I felt, the very pleasant surprise I felt at them referencing this moment and not rewriting this moment in any way, but reframing it as something that was deeply not okay to have happened.
Yeah.
For Mark and Rick to revisit this moment and say, no, 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 like what happened to Nico here was deeply wrong. It should not have happened. Not like Rick is necessarily apologizing and that he has to apologize at all, but that mm-hmm. we are addressing a moment that was like deeply traumatic for Nico and also very frightening to read about.
Mm-hmm.
And not retconning that moment in any way, but saying it from Nico's perspective, because most importantly, we were not in Nico's perspective when this happened.
Absolutely.
And hearing him get to reflect on it and say very confidently, because of his growth, mm-hmm. it should have been my choice.
Yeah. It's an important moment for sure, because of all of those metatextual layers.
And I think too about like the people who will be reading this book are like the kids who are reading Heroes of Olympus for the first time and then will like read this one soon after, or like after Trials of Apollo. Because as a kid, I would have sat down, I would have read like all of the Heroes of Olympus and then this one like in succession. And I feel like having this reference is important, because then you're not like leaving it just like how it was before. Because I feel like for all of us, it's like we read those books however many years ago. So now it's like, okay, like it's nice to see like years later. And I think it probably resonates especially different for people who are reading all the books for the first time. And it probably mm-hmm. feels like nice and smooth in a way that I think is important.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. That they didn't have to go 9 years with the terror of this moment in their hearts.
Yeah, exactly.
10 years.
10 years of worrying about what happened to Nico in that moment and if he knows that he deserved better. And he does know that he deserved better. And what's most important is that he finally gets to make the choice himself. Quote, I mean, it came about because of a misunderstanding, but still, I chose. But before we get into the story, we should know that there's an insertion here about how the gods aren't homophobic, because how can they be if they've been around for so long? How can there be homophobia in the land of the dead? It just seems so silly to judge a person's sexuality when they're dead. Shout out to all of this. That is going to change a little kid's life when they read that. It's going to change a lot of little kids' lives who are worried about going to hell. And adults, too.
Oh, yeah.
That brings us to the actual story that we've been setting up this whole time, which is that Nico is trying to ask Will out to like a little picnic with help from the satyrs and the nymphs at Camp Half-Blood. But there was a miscommunication. So
Shakespearean miscommunication here.
Yes. Instead of setting up the picnic in the woods in private, they basically created a special event for a meal for everyone at Camp Half-Blood. This is a good story. I'm really on board with the way that this is unfolding.
Oh my God, it's so adorable.
Holly crowns.
Yeah, like Nico walks into the dining pavilion and immediately he gets like a little flower crown put on his head. So there's this very... how do you say idyllic feel to this little coming out scene? Like, it makes the whole thing feel so dreamy and spring-like and of a fairy tale, which is in such stark contrast to being alone with Jason in that freaking mansion when he was forcibly outed, you know? This is, like, beautiful and full of greenery, and there are little picnic baskets on every table in the dining pavilion, and everyone is there.
And they're like, Nico has an announcement to make. Nico asked us to stage a special event for everyone so that he could share something. And yeah, at that moment, you know, like, there was pressure. There was a miscommunication, but also, as he said earlier, there's a choice. He is deciding, okay, this is where we are. People are expecting me to say something. I could say this was a mistake and sit back down, or I could just do it. I could have this moment. And here's the moment. Shall we read? I decided I could own it, do it my way. I could not only tell Will that I was gay and that I liked him, but I could tell everyone. If I was going to stay at Camp Half-Blood, I needed to know that I could be myself there, that I didn't have to hide in the shadows all the time.
You do like the shadows, though.
The whole dining pavilion went silent, and I remember standing up and clearing my throat, and then I didn't say anything for like half a minute. And then it was like a dam had broken. I just talked. I remember you being kind of defensive at first, he said, telling us all that you knew everyone talked about you, that you knew you hadn't been around all that much. It was like you were anticipating every possible argument or criticism. Nico's eyes welled with tears. But none of those worst-case scenarios happened. Instead, I told the whole camp I was gay, that I was sick of hiding the truth, that I liked Will Solis and wanted to go on a date with him. And there were no meteor showers or explosions, no mass exodus from Camp Half-Blood. He turned to Will. Do you remember what you said, Nightlight? Will rolled his eyes. I do, Death Boy. I told you that you didn't have to throw a party. I would have said yes if you just asked me. Again, I did not throw a party on purpose. But I didn't know that at the time, said Will. I was so impressed. You didn't seem like the party type, and you'd gone through all that to tell me you liked me. It helped, Nico. Helped what? Helped make it easier for me, he said. To be able to say who I am. Me agreeing to go on a date with you wasn't just me saying I thought you were cute. Which is very true. Ew, gross. It was my chance to stop hiding as well. Will's glowing skin brightened. Do you know how many others have felt comfortable coming into their own because of you, Nico? What? What are you talking about? Paolo, Malcolm Pace, Jake Mason. And it's not just in Camp Half-Blood. Piper is just as thankful for you as the others. None of them would have been able to come out if you hadn't gone first. Heat rose in Nico's cheeks. He had never thought of it that way. He'd just been trying to be himself. We often don't see the effects we have on others, said Gorgaira. In the moment, all that matters is ourselves. But you, Nico D'Angelo, do you not see what you are surrounded by?
I'm really trying not to cry.
This is putting the point on it. Yeah.
It's like every time I read it, I still feel this like exact same level of like, I don't know. It's just like my heart. It's just like, I just feel it in my chest. I don't know. It's such a special, special moment in the book.
Yeah.
It felt like this beautiful opportunity to thank this character from all of us. Nico means so much to us, you know? I'm speaking from the we perspective because it's less vulnerable. Nico means a lot to us who grew up with him and have like been with his character since we were little kids, and as the stories have gone on, gotten to see him grow and be himself at the same time that like we are learning to grow and be ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I think the invocation of Piper really got me.
Yeah.
And I think too, it doesn't feel too much like, it doesn't feel like Rick patting himself on the back for writing Nico as a character. It like genuinely feels like it's like thinking Nico, yes, as opposed to thinking Rick, which I think,
yes,
yeah,
makes it just feel so much more impactful. Because I think there was a way where it could have been written where it's like, oh, look at me, like I wrote Nico, da 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 da. But
yeah,
it's very much not that. So it feels like very real. And the line where it's like, and it's not just in Camp Half-Blood, I feel like that is very directly like, it's outside of the books. It's not just affecting, yeah, the characters in the book. Like the readers are the people outside of Camp Half-Blood who like Nico has affected in a positive way.
Again, with the reaching across the void sensation we've been discussing with this book, I feel reached.
Yeah.
I think this is a beautiful illustration and like moment of the power of fandom and, mm-hmm, community, because we're saying here, not only is this character who we've known about for 13 years had a very deep and profound impact on a lot of people who really needed to see this character, but also we are all united and like bonded by that impact that it has had on all of us, all these people outside of Camp Half-Blood who are us sitting, yeah, here in our little chairs. We all got to experience this character together, and then we all get to experience this moment. I'm grateful, yeah, for stories.
Yeah. We are all of us made of stardust.
The stories are important. And I think it's worth also highlighting the framing of the story, which is that within universe, this is Nico taking an action that should seem not on its face to be a provocation or to be a socially external thing, but that it is meaningful. Like this emotional crux of this moment is about Nico impacting other people's lives who are close to him by just doing something that is both profound and brave, but also like ordinary. that he is able to have this impact by doing something that probably many readers have done or will do or know someone who has done, and to place that relatively commonplace activity as the site of bravery and heroism in a book that juxtaposes it directly against, you know, fighting the primordial force of night is, I think, a really important way to reach out to the reader beyond just the existence of the character, but by saying, like, this is what it is about this person that you have grown up with that makes them special and gives them their power. And it is a form of being special and holding power that you can have too.
My therapist will be hearing about this moment.
Well, I think that's the end of the section.
People who don't know who Nico D'Angelo is, like people who just walk around in life not knowing, I feel so bad for them. Martha, yeah. Before you leave us.
Yes.
You were here for this one section, but would you like to say anything else about this book in general, or what reading this book was like for you?
Yeah, I guess I'll say, I think I appreciated this book for like all of the little moments in it. Because I think it's interesting that it's like we're halfway through and they're not even in Tartarus yet. And I think when I first read the book, I was like, what is going on? Like kind of confused and like not really, I don't know, necessarily like vibing with it. But I think on like a second pass through, I think I appreciate it a lot more. And yeah, I think it's really nice getting Mark's writing style meshed with Rick's in a really lovely way, because Into the Light was like one of my favorite books that I read this year.
Oh, so period.
I feel like this feels very like, I don't know, getting to see both of those. I think it's a great book. I'm happy that it exists in the world. And I don't know, no spoilers, but the end really got me. The end was where I teared up and like cried a little bit. So aww. I don't know. It's such a special book.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you for joining us today. It's so lovely to have you back. Anything we need to say? Oh my gosh. It's going to be July as we release this episode, which means that we officially have 6 Patreon episodes on our Patreon. So if you sign up for our Patreon today, you get 6 episodes from us about a variety of topics. Everyone should sign up for the Patreon because rent is expensive and we have a really good time over there. It's sort of like just doing low stakes lectures.
I listened to one of our most recent Patreon episodes as I was packing because I was like, I haven't actually listened to any of them. I was like, damn, this is kind of banging. Like this is a good time.
Tune in there if you want to hear about The Little Mermaid, about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, about Six of Crows, Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, Everything Everywhere All at Once, Makoto Shinkai. Tune in. Okay. We will see you all next week with a returning guest to talk a bit about Madame Persephone. Who's excited? I am.
Woo!
All right. Thanks, Martha.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Bye, all.
Bye.